Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're getting into a really interesting legal fight. It's one that honestly could have shaken up the music world quite a bit.
Yeah, we're talking about the lawsuit Drake filed against his own label, Universal Music Group, UMG.
Right, and it was all centered around Kendrick Lamar's track, Not Like Us, specifically the lyrics in that track and the stakes. They were incredibly high. I mean, think about it. If Drake had actually won this,
It could have totally changed how rap battles work, legally speaking.
and what labels are responsible for when they distribute, really harsh lyrics, potentially even silencing artists.
A massive chilling effect, potentially. But, well, spoiler alert if you haven't been following closely.
Ah, right. It didn't go Drake's way.
Not at all. The entire lawsuit, and there were like multiple parts to it, got completely dismissed. Just gone.
The court basically agreed with UMG's motion to dismiss and just threw the whole thing out,
Exactly. Kicked out.
which is pretty dramatic. Not just losing on one point, but a total shutdown across, what was it, three separate claims.
Three distinct claims, yeah.
So that's our mission today. We need to unpack why. Why did the court dismiss everything? How did they draw that line between a diss track, which is creative expression, and an actual legally actionable statement of fact?
It really boils down to that distinction, opinion versus fact in the eyes of the law.
Okay, so let's go back to the beginning. How did this whole thing start? It was filed back in January, right?
January, yeah. And Drake's core argument was that UMG, by putting out Not Like Us, was basically helping to spread defamation.
He used the phrase fan the flame.
Right. Claiming it hurt his reputation badly and, crucially, even put him in physical danger.
And we should probably specify, because it wasn't just general insults, was it? There was a specific focus.
Definitely. The lawsuit really zeroed in on certain lines, particularly the reference involving Pedialyte.
Ah, yes.
Drake's team argued that specific line crossed a major boundary. They said it wasn't just trash talk anymore. It was implying, well, frankly, illegal activity involving minors.
Which takes it out of typical rap beef territory.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why he could argue actual harm to reputation and safety, pushing it into, a serious legal complaint rather than just artistic sparring.
Okay, that context is vital. So, how did UMG defend against that?
Well, their defense was pretty straightforward, really. They said, look, you have to see this in context.
The rap battle context.
Exactly. There was this whole back and forth, multiple diss tracks flying around. They argued that everything said within that battle should be seen as like exaggeration, hyperbole, tongue in cheek, I think was the phrase they used.
Basically, don't take it literally.
Precisely. Not serious factual claims.
But isn't that, I mean, could you argue that's a bit of a cop-out? If a label puts out something that genuinely leads to threats or makes, factual-sounding accusations of crimes.
Shouldn't there be some accountability, regardless of the art form?
Yeah, that was exactly Drake's point. He was sort of fighting on two levels, the cultural damage, the words themselves, and then this other layer, suspicion about UMG's business practices around the song.
Ah, right. That brings us to the sort of side drama that was going on.
Yeah, because his lawyers weren't just arguing about the lyrics, they were pushing hard to get internal stuff from UMG.
Text messages, emails,
Yeah.
specifically from the CEO.
They suspected UMG might have been, what, playing games behind the scenes? Maybe even boosting the song's streams artificially?
Using bots. Yeah, that was the allegation. And to show how serious Drake was about that part.
The private investigator?
Exactly. Reports say he spent something like $75,000 on a PI,
Wow.
trying to track down a specific witness, someone who supposedly knew about stream manipulation, about botting related to Not Like Us.
So for Drake, this clearly went beyond just the lyrics. It was about the business, the charts, the perceived integrity of it all.
For sure. He felt attacked on multiple fronts.
Okay, now let's bring in another angle. There was outside input here too, right? Something that connected the cultural side back to the legal arguments.
Yes, the amicus brief, the friend of the court brief.
Filed by academics.
Yeah, a group of scholars, experts on rap music and lyrics, mostly from the University of California system.
And what was their take?
They basically told the judge, look, ruling for Drake here would be really dangerous.
Dangerous how?
For free speech, for artistic expression. Their whole point was that rap, especially battle rap, relies on things like exaggeration, creating personas, fictionalization. It's not meant to be taken as literal truth.
They actually gave examples, didn't they, to illustrate that point about personas.
They did. A really good one was 50 Cent.
Oh, interesting.
The Brief pointed out how 50 Cent himself has said, you know, he rapped about dealing drugs or heavy drinking to build his image, to sell records, even though he wasn't actually doing a lot of that stuff.
So the argument is it's performance, it's storytelling, not journalism.
Exactly. It's about metaphorical one-upmanship, wordplay, wit, not laying out provable facts for a courtroom.
And that cultural context seems like it was really important for the judge's final decision.
Critically important. The court's entire ruling pretty much hung on setting up a legal way to interpret the artistic context. Okay, so the court established this framework. It was based on existing law, right? First Amendment, New York law.
Yeah, kind of three-factor test. The goal was to sort out what's protected opinion free speech versus what's an untrue statement of fact that actually causes harm, which is defamation.
Okay, factor one.
Factor one was the form and context of delivery. Basically, where and how was the statement made?
Okay.
So the court contrasted, say, a quick post on X, you know, Twitter, which people generally see as just opinion off-the-cuff remarks.
Right, versus like a formal article in a newspaper.
Exactly. A proper news publication, they called it. That carries an expectation of fact-checking journalistic standards.
So where does a diss track fall?
The court put it firmly in the creative non-factual category. They said when something is presented as music, especially a diss track, in a known public feud.
The average listener gets it.
Right. The average person understands it's likely hyperbole, maybe exaggeration, poetic license. They're not expecting a literal news report set to a beat.
Makes sense. What was factor two?
Factor two, surrounding circumstances. And this is where Drake's attempt to isolate the song failed.
Ah, he wanted the court to just look at Not Like Us by itself.
Yeah, arguing the lyrics were bad enough on their own. But the court said, no way. Context is everything. We have to look at the whole picture.
The entire rap battle diss track championship, as they put it.
Exactly. You can't just ignore the back and forth that was happening.
Did they use an analogy for that?
They did. They compared it to political campaigns.
Oh, interesting.
You know how candidates throw insults around? The court said most people understand that as political mudslinging, trying to score points, not necessarily literal factual statements.
So diss tracks operate under similar kind of heightened combative rules of engagement.
That was the court's view, yeah. The context signals it's not a neutral statement of fact.
Okay, and the third factor?
Factor three was tone and language. What kind of words are being used?
Like profanity, trash talk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Profanity. Threats, even if not literal, really hyperbolic language. The court said those are strong signs that someone isn't giving you a factual, objective account.
Contrasting it again with, say,
a properly structured and professional-looking article, like in Forbes, was the example used. The tone itself signals the intent.
And did this apply to the visuals, too, like the cover art?
It did. They specifically mentioned the cover art, the image that seemed to show Drake's house with all those Pedialyte bottles outside.
Yeah, that was pretty pointed.
But the court said, again, context, it's part of the overall diss package. The average person probably isn't going to believe that's a real documented photo.
They'll see it as part of the exaggeration, the insult.
Right. Part of the artistic statement, however harsh.
So, wow. The court essentially laid out rules for how to legally interpret rap beef.
Pretty much. It's like a legal confirmation that artistic context matters, maybe even more than literal words in these kinds of creative battles.
Protecting that space for hyperbole and expression within the genre.
Okay, so that covers the main defamation claim. But there were those other two claims, right? They got tossed out too.
Yep, both failed, but for more technical legal reasons. Let's take the harassment claim first.
What happened there?
That one was dismissed pretty quickly because the specific law Drake's team cited, it was a criminal harassment statute in New York.
Criminal, not civil.
Exactly. And critically, that criminal law didn't include what's called a private right of action, meaning an individual person can't sue someone else for money damages under that specific criminal law. It's for the state to prosecute, not for private lawsuits.
Got it. So wrong type of law cited for a civil suit.
Basically, yeah. Procedural dismissal.
Okay. And then the big one, the streaming fraud and business law claim. This was the whole cooking the books accusation against UMG.
Right. The idea that Universal was maybe in cahoots with Spotify, artificially inflating the stream, counts for Not Like Us.
Paying influencers to hype it up. All while Drake himself was supposedly being defamed by the song they were pushing.
It was a pretty explosive accusation against his own label.
So why did that one fail? Did they just not have proof?
That was the core issue. Drake was claiming consumer fraud, but the court pointed out, well, you're the artist, not the consumer in this scenario.
He wasn't the one being tricked into streaming it?
Exactly. He couldn't show he was personally confused or financially harmed as a consumer by this alleged fraud, which you usually need to do for those kinds of claims.
So the legal standing wasn't there.
Right. And beyond the standing issue, the court said the claims were just too speculative. They called them pie in the sky.
Ouch.
Meaning Drake hadn't actually presented any concrete evidence of this supposed scheme, just accusations. Not enough to let the claim move forward in court.
So across the board, defamation, harassment, fraud, total dismissal.
A clean sweep for UMG.
And the next step, Drake's appealing, right? His lawyers have said he plans to appeal, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But most legal watchers think the odds are pretty slim. Why is that?
Because the judge's initial ruling was so thorough. It relied heavily on established First Amendment principles, the context, the specific facts. It wasn't some wild outlier decision. Overturning it would be a heavy lift.
Hmm. So, probably not changing soon. But what about the ongoing relationship, Drake and UMG?
Yeah, that's the really awkward part now, isn't it?
UMG just won this huge legal battle against one of their biggest stars. They probably spent a fortune on lawyers.
Oh, easily hundreds of thousands, maybe more.
And yet, they still have to work with him, promote his next album, manage his career.
Talk about a difficult business relationship going forward. That's going to require some very careful handling on both sides, I imagine.
Definitely a situation to watch. But let's bring it back to the listener. What's the main legal takeaway for, you know, for us?
I think the clearest message is about context in creative expression. This ruling really reinforces that when you're dealing with art, especially something like a diss track known for exaggeration.
The tone, the language, the whole environment matters.
Hugely. The court is saying, in that context, it's legally treated as protected opinion, not a factual statement you can sue over for defamation.
It sort of carves out a safer space for artists to engage in that kind of verbal sparring without constantly fearing lawsuits.
Yeah, it protects a certain tradition of artistic license, even when it's aggressive.
Okay, that makes sense.
But it does leave us with a final thought, maybe something for you to chew on.
Go for it.
If the key things determining opinion versus fact are context, tone, and the forum or platform, how might this logic apply outside of music? Think about political satire or stand-up comedy or even just really sharp online commentary.
Yeah. Where do those things fit?
This ruling kind of underlines why jokes or exaggerated critiques in those areas usually aren't treated as literal factual claims legally. But it makes you wonder, where is that line, really? When does hyperbole actually cross over into causing real actionable harm, even if it's presented creatively? It's a tricky balance.
Definitely something to think about, how context shapes meaning, not just in art, but everywhere.